You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. Training camp started today.
It did. It's an exciting time for everybody, I think, in Heat Nation. A lot going on, both on and off the court.
Yeah, they got to start it in the Bahamas. It sounds like from all of the reports that we're hearing that they're not going to be enjoying the Bahamas. They've got two-a-day practice today, right?
Right.
It's intense. It's a real season of change, so to speak, for the Heat, right? Like they gotta prepare.
Yeah, there's a lot to focus on. Roles to be clearly carved out. Players need to determine exactly where they fit as far as this roster is currently composed. And there's a lot happening here, especially with a vacuum created by the absence of both Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh.
I don't know which reporter was asking, like, are you going to go down, like, the slides and the water parks and all this stuff? And, you know, Whiteside responded, like, no, I'll stick to the ocean at Miami Beach. I'm good. But, like, what's the point of doing the training camp in the Bahamas if this team's not even able to enjoy themselves? Like, you'd think there'd at least be, like, a team bonding activity or something, like swim with the dolphins or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds like fun, but I think they've talked about it before. I mean, it certainly was the case in 2011, I guess, when they first held training camp here. And I think Spoelstra addressed that comment or that question prior to this training camp. I think in Media Day, he actually mentioned it, that this was a point of emphasis for the team, trying to get away from the distractions, not just related to Chris Bosh, but all the questions surrounding the team. Everybody's going to be asking about Dwayne Wade and how this team moves forward. But this is just about on-court activity, trying to focus on that and clearly establish what this team is all about, because it's definitely a season of redefining who they are as a squad.
I get it, but unlike like the last time when this team was in the Bahamas with like a bunch of veterans like Wade and Bosh and LeBron and like, you know, Battier and all those guys, it's like Justice Winslow, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, like these young guys who spent their summers like buying brand new million-dollar mansions and like pimped out Jeeps and stuff like that. Like that's got, I don't know, if I'm Winslow and Richardson, I'm trying to sneak out and at least do something. But
well, I'm sure there's some of that going on.
Okay. Well, let's talk about LeBron James, because we haven't done that in a while.
It has been at least a day.
He's inserted himself into the Chris Bosh conversation. Well, not so much inserted. That's not fair.
Because he's been inserted. Yeah, what? He's been inserted.
Well, he was asked a question about Chris Bosh, right? And so he added this comment. He says, I stand behind my brother Chris, and that I was pretty surprised to hear that the team was just done with him, for them to come out and say that. But it's not like I've been there to know exactly what's going on. I've only seen it from the exterior. I wish the best for him. He has my support. The money line there is, I'm surprised, right?
Well, yeah, and I think the continuation of that, to hear right. that the team was just done with him.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, the fact that Chris Bosh sought the experience and the platform established by LeBron James and his representation, you know, specifically Maverick Carter, has fueled a lot of conspiracy theories from, you know, Heat fans over the last few days. And this comment certainly doesn't help with that. I mean, it seems a little unnecessary. I've seen some blowback from Heat fans about the passive aggressive nature of LeBron James, how he's taken, you know, jabs at the Miami Heat over the last couple of years since he left in 2014. And this seems like, you know, yet another one. I mean, there's clearly a lot going on there. He did not leave on good terms, and that's unfortunate. You'd like to think that the 4 years of success that he had here were strong enough to outweigh any kind of aggression or passive aggressiveness towards the front office or maybe Pat Riley specifically. But clearly that's not the case. I mean, he's looking for whatever opportunity he has to remind everybody that, you know, maybe the Heat isn't exactly on the up and up when it comes to their dealings with players. And I mean, we saw that comment specifically from Chris Bosh. We talked about it in the previous podcast, how alarming it was to think that, you know, he was just kind of swept under the rug by the team doctors and Pat Riley and the rest of the front office. And clearly there is an issue here. And you wonder how that's going to affect any future free agents, anybody who's interested in Heat culture moving forward. I mean, you can recall back just last offseason when one of the biggest points for Goran Dragic re-signing here, in his own words, were that this was a loyal franchise. And you know, that was in contrast to what he felt was a betrayal when he was a member of the Phoenix Suns and from that ownership group. But now all of a sudden, you know, it's like, you know, Miami's ownership and front office is under the microscope as well. So there's a lot going on there.
I mean, there's certainly the loyalty aspect is interesting here. I mean, obviously the entirety of the Big Three is now gone, and in ways that, you know, their relationship with the front office isn't good anymore, right? Like, and that is a big blow.
It's fractured, yeah.
And you wonder, you know, if you're Pat Riley, you're trying to go out next summer to sign a free agent. Not only do you not have a core to build around, like you don't have Dwayne Wade to help draw players to sign with you. You know, you're trying to, maybe that's Hassan Whiteside, but he just doesn't strike me as that. He's not that level player that Dwayne Wade was in 2010. I mean, Goran Dragic isn't that either. So, there's certainly that aspect of it. I did want to talk about LeBron's comment about, it's not like I've been there to know exactly what's going on. Dog, you know exactly what's going on. Chris Bosh is publishing his documentary through Maverick Carter, which is ostensibly through you, you know, and that's, like, of course he knows what's going on. That's what, to me, was just, like, of course, like, he's not going to say, I know exactly what's going on, and the Heat are screwing him. Like, LeBron is too politically savvy to say that, but he knows what's going on, right? Like, that's ridiculous.
I mean, I guess he would hear from Chris saying, oh, man, Pat hasn't contacted me, or the doctor said blank, and I haven't heard from blank, or, I mean, he's... you know, obviously privy to whatever's happened over the last few months.
To say I've only seen it from the exterior is a flat-out lie. Like, you know more than you and I, like, than we know, that are just watching his documentary videos.
Right. And it's also, it seems a little disingenuous of him to say that he stands behind his brother Chris, but I never really quite got that feeling that there was a close friendship between those two. Like, if anything, there was a closer friendship between Wade and Bosch, and then Wade and LeBron, and then ostensibly then those three would be connected in that regard. But, you know, yeah, obviously they played together for 4 years, but you don't see him calling Udonis Haslam his brother, or, you know, Joel Anthony his brother, or Mario Chalmers, you know, all these players that he played with during those 4 years of the Big Three era. And I did see some people hint at the possibility that LeBron actually left Miami resentful of Bosch and the fact that he may have been fatigued throughout the course of that season. That was something I'd never really heard before, but it strikes me as a possible option as to why LeBron, you know, might have left Miami and had, you know, an extra factor in his decision-making process. But, you know, now to call him a brother, now to say that he supports him 100%, seems a little disingenuous to me.
Yeah, nothing surprising with LeBron. You mentioned Mario Chalmers there. I tweeted this out like a few days ago after Mo Williams announced that he was retiring, which like made headlines for some reason.
Yes, he should join the Cavs.
Right?
Absolutely. Perfect fit.
Wouldn't you be excited to see him? I know it's like the Cavaliers, but like it would be exciting to see him on the court for like a winning team. I just want the best for Rio, man. Like, I know I'm a Heat fan. I know I'm not supposed to like the Cavaliers, but it's my boy Rio. Like, I just want him to be happy.
Yeah.
I put my personal biases aside for Mario Chalmers.
I think it's important to see Mario play basketball anywhere. I'd like him to be MVP of the Chinese Basketball Association. I'd like him to dominate wherever he goes, to be honest with you. I think he deserves all the success in the world. And if it happens to be in Cleveland, now I'll tell you what, though. I did see pictures of Chris Bergman Anderson in a Cavs jersey from Media Day, and it did not sit well with me.
Chris Anderson was tough, right?
To see him in a Grizzlies uniform last season, especially after he had struggled so much in Miami, and you kind of, you know, that team was, they were so beset by injuries. And the thing was that he wasn't going to get playing time here because, you know, unfortunately he just wasn't very productive when he was on the floor, but at least he was getting that in Memphis, right? So you could say, well, it sucks to see him go, but at least he's getting playing time. He's getting an opportunity to prove that maybe he still has something left in the tank. And he certainly did that. I mean, I can't say he was great in that role. In fact, I'm sure he struggled there because age and injuries have caught up to him. But to see him be likely the 14th, 15th guy in the Cavs roster, that just sucks. Especially after in 2014, he specifically chose to re-sign with Miami rather than follow LeBron to Cleveland. And, you know, he talked about the fact that he had built something here and that there was a better business opportunity for him to remain with Miami, especially since he had won here and you know, made a name for himself, or, you know, made a name for himself again after years of being out of the league. It's tough to swallow. That was a jagged pill to swallow.
Yeah, now you have me thinking if I know I could handle Rio. I can handle it. I just, the difference is Rio's not in the league right now. I got to see him, man.
I mean, I don't think he's been contacted by anything. I don't think anybody's thinking of it. I mean, and yeah, it's probably
the injury thing, right? Like, that's the problem. But okay, well, let's just take a quick break to talk about the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On Heat is obviously a part of that network. We've said it a million times. You can check out Locked On NBA with our boss, David Locke, Locked On Fantasy Basketball with our guy, Josh Lloyd, and Locked On Miami Dolphins because it's football season. And training camp has just started. Preseason is just days away. So David and I are here every day talking about the Miami Heat. We'll be covering the Heat throughout the season with post-game analysis, previews, mailbags, interviews, and more. Locked On Heat is the only daily Heat podcast, so make us part of your daily routine. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And by the way, if we're not on your preferred podcast app, we try to get on all of them, but if there's like one that you just love to use and we're not on it, let us know and we'll be on it. Like, we'll get there and we'll hit you up when we're there. And while you're at it, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Heat. Feel free to send your mailbag questions and comments to lockedonheat@gmail.com. And we say it all the time, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. What we're doing from now until Friday, we're hoping to get 30 new 5-star ratings. iTunes gives a bump to podcasts based on reviews, so it'll really help us. So please just take 30 seconds, literally just get on iTunes, search Locked On Heat, and then you just hit 5 stars. That's all you gotta do. It takes 30 seconds, if that. It would mean a lot to us. Again, the goal is 30 new 5-star ratings between now and the end of the week. That's all.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like an unreachable goal, I think. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback, and we want to keep getting more from our listeners. We want all kind of feedback, and unfortunately, we can't leave those reviews ourselves, or else we try our best to leave as many as possible, but that's not how it works. We can't vote early and often, unfortunately, so we want to hear from you and let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, or what you'd like to see throughout the rest of the season.
Absolutely, because this is a fluid situation. We're daily. We can use ideas. If you want us to do something specific during the season, we'll do it.
Absolutely.
If it means that we have to get drunk and do a drunk podcast, we will go to those lengths if that's what it takes.
I'm drunk right now.
I would expect nothing less.
Absolutely.
All right. So Hassan Whiteside, newly minted $98 million contract, says he's working on building chemistry and showing the team that he's trustworthy with this newfound wealth of his. During media day on Monday, his teammates said that they weren't worried about his contract, and he had, you know, he was quoted as, you know, with some interesting comments about his perspective on it. It's his first time being on a professional basketball team for more than 2 years. Actually, more than, he said, even it's more than he's been on his high school team or in college. It's, you know, he's never been on a team for more than 2 years. This is the first time. Eric Spoelstra said he's not worried about, you know, Whiteside at all, that, you know, he earned his contract. He earned his career stability, and now it's just about winning. And Whiteside says that he plans on leading by example. What did you make of his comments? Are you worried at all about Whiteside? I know we've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, after media day and all these comments, what's your thoughts?
Look, unfortunately, neither of us were able to attend Miami's media day, but I was able to go to Orlando's, and I've been able to go for the past 2 years. And what I can tell you from my personal experience is that on media day, on 30 teams across the league, everybody is great and hunky-dory, and there has never been a problem in the history of the NBA.
Unless you're the 76ers and you're Nerlens Noel, who basically demands a trade on media day.
That is an unusual situation. Well, I mean, after a couple of years of Sam Hinkie and trusting the process, I guess that would wear on anybody. But clearly it's gone to a point for Nerlens Noel that he has to be a little public with his grievances.
That's a bold
elsewhere.
Move by Nerlens. Like, on media day, you saved that? Like, that was, you had that locked and loaded, ready to go.
I mean, and you're going to have media attending these, you know, events throughout the league that are not going to cover the team at any other point. They're never going to have that kind of unlimited access. There are people there from every radio station, podcast, blog in town. And they are there covering this event. And so with as many people as possible, you drop a bomb like that, that's saying something. I mean, that's a pretty bold move. Everywhere else, though, I mean, it's nothing but flowers, puppy dogs, and ice cream. You know, it is happy, happy, fun times elsewhere. And everybody's super positive. Everybody has a chance of making the playoffs, even the worst teams in the league. And everybody loves the roster composition, the makeup of the team. There's never been an issue on media day outside of Philadelphia, of course. So I like the fact that his teammates are rallying behind him and don't think that there's an issue. I don't necessarily think there's an issue either. I don't know that he's necessarily going to turn into a bad player. I don't know that he's necessarily going to grow either, but I don't know that he's going to turn all of a sudden be a worse player than he was, you know, or the player he was three seasons ago before he joined Miami. If anything, it'll probably remain status quo. He's going to still be able to block shots because of his length and athleticism. That hasn't gone anywhere. He reported to camp in great shape. He looks active and engaged. And as far as I'm concerned, that's where he's going to make his greatest impact on the floor. What we're looking for him is to be better than he's been in the past couple of seasons. And that's going to be a tricky, fluid situation, I think. It's going to be relying on him developing that chemistry with Goran Dragic and others. He needs to be more of a facilitator on offense, you know, especially his passing has been such an underutilized part of his game. We've talked about that before. We want to see that greater development from him. But it's good to see people responding positively and saying, especially Spoelstra, giving him a vote of confidence. That's always a good positive thing, I think. You know, Spoelstra has always been the kind of player's coach that speaks positively and favorably of his team. And I think that's a key step for him also, is to kind of build the confidence of his team, because lacking the veteran leadership that they've had on the roster over the last six seasons, you know, they definitely need a vote of confidence, and we're looking for that from Spoelstra. And I think Whiteside is going to be buoyed by that vote of confidence from his head coach.
A couple things that did stick out to me was that Whiteside still has goals, you know, and he laid them out. He wants to make an all-star. He's got short-term and long-term goals, and I think that's really valuable. I know, like, yeah, media day is all, you know, fluff and flower, but I did like to hear that the short-term goal of the all-star game and the long-term goal of being a Hall of Famer, and whether or not that's obscure or not, or outlandish or not, it's a goal, right? And that's good, and he's got very high goals. I mean, he went from trying to get his 2K rating above 80 to wanting to be in the Hall of Fame, right? Like, that's, as
big
he's
leap.
Progressed through his career, his goals have gotten larger, you know? And I think back to, I don't know if you read Jonathan Abrams' book, Boys Among Men.
I did. I actually got a free copy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We talked about that before. So
we did.
One of the things, like, in that Abrams tries to kind of case study a little bit is what set apart the high schoolers that, like, Kobe who made it and the high schoolers that didn't, right? Like, the Sebastian Telfairs. Like, what set them apart? Like, and one of the things that he keyed in on was that the goal wasn't to get to the NBA. The goal was to be an all-time great. And that's what separates guys like Kobe and Kevin Garnett from the duds, the guys that kind of just blew out. And these Whiteside comments reminded me of that a little bit. Does he have that inner drive? I think there's clearly a little bit of that. Like, he could have given up when Lebanon was the last team that called him, right? Was the only team that was calling, was Lebanon. He could have just, there's no way I'm going to Lebanon. Like, there's a certain amount of drive for him in some way. So that, to me, is what stuck out.
To follow up on that, I mean, we've talked about it before. It's an 82-game season, and there's the playoff push after that. And so throughout the course of the year, throughout these long, hopefully long careers of our players, there's always going to be a need for perceived slight in order to drive them. And whatever that might be, whether it's an external goal like that one, or just because you think people doubt you, you need to have something fuel you. So I was listening the other day to Chris Paul on JJ Redick's podcast over on The Vertical. And what he was saying is what's driven him isn't necessarily winning, but rather that he just hates losing. And so there's always something that drives these players in order to achieve the success that they do. And you know, Chris Paul's particular case, it's, you know, the hatred of losing. And for Whiteside, whether or not it's the fact that he's already, you know, always been neglected, or not necessarily been like the star player in any team, or he's always been discounted in some way, shape, or form, that's what continues to drive him. But he's got these goals now, and you're right. I mean, there is something positive to be taken from that. And we have to see the work. We have to see the progress from him, particularly offensively. But as long as he continues to increase those goals and reach new and new levels, I think the Heat will be happy to and feel validated in extending the contract that they did to him.
And speaking of motivations and goals and everything, Dion Waiters is somebody who clearly has some motivation, right? He's bounced around the league after being picked in the top five of the draft and number four overall, I believe, and has been bouncing around for years now, and he wants to find some stability, and that's why he chose the Miami Heat. He's reportedly lost 10 pounds. Spo said that he loved his conditioning. How significant is Waiters' weight loss?
Not at all.
Not at all?
No, I don't think so. I was there in 2015 when he was visiting the Thunder Summer League team in Orlando, and I saw him talk about his weight loss and his off-season plan to work out with Kobe Bryant, something that never manifested. And he was talking about what great shape he's in and everything else. And to be honest with you, I don't know that he was necessarily in great. I mean, he was in as good a shape as he ever was last season, as he was the season before that, as he is this season. I don't really think that there's anything there. I don't know why his weight becomes an issue at some point. I think they reported that he showed up a little bit heavier, 234, and then he dropped to 224.
Yeah.
And then he's at a certain, you know, body fat percentage, which is great. I don't see how he lost those 10 pounds that quickly unless he was just like pounding on junk food.
Well, everybody, we've talked about this. Like, everybody, once they like start playing in Miami, they tend to lose a little weight, right?
I mean, there are stricter goals here in Miami. I mean, you can ask Tim Hardaway about that, but certainly
you lose some of that water weight from the sweating just because it's hot and humid and everything. I think that's a factor for sure.
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to say he's ready to become a Hall of Fame player based on the fact that he lost 10 pounds. No. It's good to hear. And, you know, just another one of the many positive storylines that we hear on Media Day and stuff like that. But, you know, it's, again, the positive thing that I took from it is that Spoelstra went out of his way to compliment Dion specifically, to say, you know, he's reported in great shape, that he continues to do the work and things of that sort. And I think that's something that Dion needs to hear. He's never been, I don't know, he's necessarily gotten that kind of support in the past, although I did see positives between his short relationship with Scott Brooks when he first joined the Oklahoma City Thunder. And unfortunately, Brooks was fired, you know, a couple of months later, and then he had to regain that trust with Billy Donovan, who was a noted hard ass. And I think that was, you know, that might have hurt Waiters' tenure in Oklahoma City a little bit, because all of a sudden he has to deal with, I think, his fourth head coach in a four-year span. So he's had to go through quite a bit in his short NBA tenure. This is his fifth, you know, head coach in 5 years. But clearly there's a good positive foundation there for an ongoing relationship. So I'm encouraged by that, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I think that overall the situation, like the atmosphere, like you're alluding to, I mean, he's been in the league for a while, but he's still only 24 years old, I think, right? And
This is the start of his fifth year, yeah.
And this is kind of a team that's more in line with his age. Like, Winslow's like 20, but he like acts like he's at least 25, you know, like,
sure.
Josh Richardson was a 4-year college player. I mean, there's like Whiteside's like among the, is like, I think the second oldest guy in the starting lineup that we know for sure, because we don't know who's starting at power forward now, and he's 27.
Right.
So,
right. No, I think even, well, I mean, who else could possibly start at power forward that would be older than Whiteside at this point? I mean, Goran Dragic at 30.
That's true.
And that's not even that old, right? I mean, yeah. He's 30 years old, and he's still got at least 3 or 4 years of prime play in him, at least.
Yeah. So I think like Waiters is in a good like environment where it's like guys his age. Like, yeah, he entered the Cavaliers, but the Cavaliers, like, you know, handed him and Kyrie Irving the ball and are like, make us win.
Do something.
You know, yeah. and then they didn't. And then LeBron James was there, and all of a sudden it became a veteran group, and then he was shipped off to Oklahoma City, and that was already kind of, you know, even though it was Durant and Westbrook, they've seen some shit, and they've, like, you know what I mean? Like, they were a veteran group.
Well, even in that first season he was there, that was when Durant got hurt and Westbrook was on fire and, you know, virtually unstoppable, a triple-double machine on every night, and they missed the playoffs. And Dion was kind of forced into that situation. And then the next year, Durant comes back and so Ibaka's there. And, you know, that clearly there were some issues there as well. So, I mean, but yeah, I think this is a better fit for him overall.
All right. Well, we're going to be covering comments from training camp and training camp developments throughout the week as training camp continues. Our last thing that we want to talk about today, before we save some stuff that we'll get to tomorrow, but the last thing we want to talk about today, Josh McRoberts' training camp has quite literally not gotten off on the right foot.
Ooh.
It's not good. I like that. I was really happy.
Ooh.
I'm proud of myself. He has foot injury.
Yeah, it's, no, I mean,
I'm a writer,
wordplay on your part.
This is what I do.
really, really good stuff on your part, but at the same time, just unfortunate overall. I'm just so bummed out about the news because, you know, I want to say on Monday's podcast, we talked about the possibility of McRoberts starting and being a viable option to help fuel a fast-paced offense. And now
I had an article come out today on – I wrote about it for All You Can Heat today about how McRoberts could carry the momentum from last season's Eastern Conference semifinals. And then, you know, that publishes an hour later, boom.
Yeah, not good. Not good. You know, a lot of fans are soured on the McRoberts addition. They haven't seen anything close to the kind of production we expected from him or the kind of numbers he put up when he was with the Charlotte Bobcats. So this is definitely a disappointing setback for him and for Miami.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm going to give up on any expectation that McRoberts can even be a factor. Not to say that I've given up on the possibility, just I don't even want the expectations anymore, you know? Like, we talked about it, you know, when he signed in Miami, and I loved the signing. I thought that the way that he could, the passing game that he's got, his vision, the way that he's, you know, he's athletic around the perimeter, he could set screens, he can just kind of be like this Boris Diaw-like glue guy. And right. That just never developed in Miami. And it's just like, God, like his, I was looking at his stats when he was in Charlotte and they're, you know, they're well known, but 36% on almost 4 3-pointers a game. Like, imagine if he brought that to Miami. I've just like, I think that's been like a pipe dream almost for so many Heat fans now, just because he can't even get on 59 games in the last two seasons. That's it. He's played as many games as Bosch has missed due to the blood clot. I mean, that's crazy.
It is. I mean, I remember talking to Bobcats writers at the time of his addition, and they were so, I mean, they were bummed out, disappointed that he had left the team because he had been such a positive thing there. Not only was he a fan favorite with the hair and the attitude and everything else, I mean, that's all great to see, those intangibles, but he was also fun to watch. I mean, he could finish at the rim, he could spot up from outside. His brilliant passing really got their offense going. That was a team that struggled to score at times because they were just mostly known for their defense, but he helped fuel that team. You know, he was a starter at that point. To think about that player and how far he's dropped from that level is frightening. And I think that's why there's so much disappointment from Heat fans. I mean, obviously he was supposed to be a big part of something else. He was supposed to be a backup to LeBron James and during the 2014-15 season. That never worked out, obviously. But he hasn't even come close to being the kind of player that he was in Charlotte.
Yeah, everything that you're talking about, why Hornets fans were bummed out that he was leaving, is exactly what would be really awesome. And everything that we're talking about, how this team, this new Heat team under Eric, you know, with Spoelstra's new direction that he's probably going to be going in with the more spacing and ball movement and stuff, just because right. There's not one dominant player.
Right.
McRoberts would be perfect for that, and it just sucks. So by no means is this right foot injury season ending. It's just like, God, just stay healthy for like 2 months, dude. Like, we don't know how he injured it, but he was on the bike today, reportedly at training camp, but whatever that's worth, you know, bike.
Yeah. So I don't, at this point, I mean, okay. So obviously he can't be traded. You know, if the alleged reports that came out when they were looking to clear some cap space to re-sign Wade are true, nobody was willing to take McRoberts off their hands. So that's a scary thing. And I can't blame the 29 other teams or whatever teams Miami didn't wind up contacting. They don't want to take a chance on acquiring a guy like McRoberts. But is it a guarantee that he'll make this roster? Do they still have that kind of faith in him? Or can they possibly waive him and stretch out the impact on the salary cap and maybe alleviate a little cap space in that sense? Because
you're talking about the stretch provision.
Yes, exactly. I just don't know if he factors in. I think, you know, if we're talking about this team being younger, faster, et cetera, at this point, he's older. He's probably not going to be healthy for a prolonged period of time. Is he ever going to fit into this team's plans moving forward? His timetable might be completely off from the rest of this younger, up-tempo kind of team. He might just not fit into this team's plans anymore. So I wonder whether or not they consider waiving him before the end of the start of the season.
It's interesting. I would say no, only because I think the other argument there is if Bosch is going to be just like this placeholder 15th player on the roster, if he's not going to play and nothing happens to his contract between now and February, then between him and Mick Roberts never being healthy, you're only working with 13 guys, right? So if you're trying to sign somebody, I could see why you would stretch Mick Roberts or just flat out waive him or agree on some sort of buyout or something, right?
Right.
Mick Roberts might agree to a buyout. He might just be over it. But
it's not. I mean,
who do you get in that roster spot? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think
Jankovic. I prefer to call Stanks. Maybe he didn't participate today, but his injury concerns are not nearly what Mick Roberts' are. Right. Maybe he shows out, and you're like, okay, let's get Stanks a try here. Or you try to keep maybe Briante Weber and Luke Babbitt on the roster, or somebody that might, you know, some fringe player or whatever. I don't know, but that's the only
reason. I did offer the possibility before our podcast. What if the Heat looked into signing veteran Josh Smith and bringing him onto the roster? I mean, he's a guy who has been able to play. He's, you know, struggled with efficiency. You know, he's been a loose cannon at times. He hasn't necessarily been a positive offensively and certainly not defensively. So you wonder maybe if this is a team of misfit players, you know, the island of misfit players here, maybe you want to bring a guy like Josh Smith, and maybe he can look to Miami the same way Derek Williams and Deion Waiters and James Johnson and other guys are looking at Miami as an opportunity to salvage their what's left of their respective careers. Maybe he's a guy who will be willing to do a little bit more during his 1 year in Miami. Maybe Spoelstra finds a way to reach him in a way that Doc Rivers and Kevin McHale and whoever was coaching him in Atlanta couldn't get through to him, you know? I mean, he's just gone through such a weird career. I mean, oh, I'm sorry, Stan Van Gundy couldn't get through to him. So, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on with Josh Smith. I don't know if he's necessarily a good fit. I think you're a little bit higher on him than I am, but, I mean, He's a NBA caliber player at this point.
Yeah, I like his, you know, I like his versatility, but I don't think he's necessarily a good fit for Miami. Just because he is a little bit of a ball hog, and I think when you have guys who are young, they need the ball in their hands, and I just don't know if it's worth the risk. What's the most you're getting out of Josh Smith that's worth the risk? Like, that's not necessarily like a high risk, high reward. Or a low risk, high reward type move. Like, I just don't know that the reward is high with Josh Smith, but it's definitely like it does seem like maybe a Riley move. Like, just a guy who's a veteran who's looking for redemption. Like, that sounds like the kind of guy that Riley might bring in, but who knows? Too bad Michael Beasley's not available anymore.
Yeah, and I miss Jarnell Stokes too.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, the Waiters Island of misfit players will move on with or without Josh Smith. All right. Well, that's all we have for today, and whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me, David.
Absolutely, Wes.
And don't forget, we have our challenge by the end of the week, 30 new reviews on iTunes. So get on iTunes for 30 seconds. It's all it takes. 5-star review. Nothing less, nothing more. That's the only thing we'll accept. All right. Catch you next time.